Even when you feel low, you can still go.
Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Moments away, we will go to the Proclamation Hotline for Stephanie Rose. But first, Simple Grow, a simple product to help your plants grow better.
Are you worried about your plant growth? Provide your plants with what they need to grow to their potential with Simple Grow. Simple Grow offers 100% organic worm castings at simplegrow.com. Unlike other worm casting products, when you order from Simple Grow, you're getting 100% worm casting, not filler plus castings.
See, they don't play around. No. They give you the whole deal and nothing but the deal. 100% worm castings, that's it.
Yeah, you can promote ideal soil structure and aeration with Simple Grow all-natural odor-free worm castings. There's only one ingredient, worm castings. No chemicals or additives will seep into your food, and it doesn't smell like other fertilizers. For indoor and outdoor use, order by the bag, bundle, ton, or truckload. Check out what Simple Grow 100% worm castings can do for your plants and order today at simplegrow.com.
Well, Holly, let's go to the Proclamation Hotline, brought to you by Proclamation Goods, and bring in our guests for this week.
Stephanie Rose spends her time as a gardener, writer, and artist in Vancouver, BC, Canada, where she has turned her small urban yard into a garden therapy heaven. She's passionate about organic gardening, natural healing, and art as a part of life. Welcome to the program, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you today, Joey and Holly.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the United States. We thank you for that.
So, it's my pleasure.
So I want to start with this question. What is garden therapy? I was mentioned in the intro there. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, back in 2006, all of a sudden, overnight, I don't know what happened. I got a headache, and I couldn't get out of bed for almost 2 years. It was something that came on really suddenly, and I was completely disabled. So I wasn't able to leave my home, and as I started to gain a little bit more strength, started to heal, I decided, you know, I'm going to use my outdoor space as my rehabilitation program. So I didn't know how to garden. I grew up in the city, and I went outside and I just started scratching in the soil a little bit, went back to basics, learned how to plant seeds, grew herbs, made all my own food, and started just, you know, getting that experience of plants and gardening as therapy. It really helped me heal. I saw a really big transformation in my garden space and in my whole being, my body, my emotional state, even gardening is so great for your, to exercise your mind. So as you can imagine, I was kind of, you know, feeling like I needed that exercise of getting out there and learning about the science of plants. So all of those things is what garden therapy means to me, because it's something that heals me from a very severe disability.
And I don't want this to sound like I'm making light of others who have conditions that they don't know if they'll come out of. But in that 2 years that you were stuck in your house, you didn't know if you were ever going to get out again. And when you was it almost like a second chance at life?
Oh, absolutely. I often say that gardening saved my life, and I don't mean that in a way that's exaggerated at all, because you know, it didn't feel like I had much of a life when I was confined to bed.
Yeah, that definitely is very understandable. So one of your books is Garden Alchemy. What is Garden Alchemy? And tell us, you know, more about what's in your book and how that can be helpful for gardeners.
Yeah, so when I was out there learning how to garden, I found that the information that we were given on how to garden, it was very much sent for, you know, I guess, based on agriculture practices. So based on, you know, how farming was done. So taking that farming concept and bringing it to our home gardens. And I thought, you know, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. When I looked at how gardening was done in the forest or in a meadow, how Mother Nature gardens, how those ecosystems exist, I thought there has to be a better way. So I started, when I started gardening, and again, it was many years ago, I became a master gardener, and then I became a permaculture designer, and I started studying herbalism and plant medicine. So I took all of those concepts together. I had written a number of books, but I had my Garden Alchemy book that came out in 2020 was this combination of permaculture, herbalism, and organic gardening, and using plants as medicine to treat our garden. So it's a, like a recipe or a cookbook for your garden, where you open it up and it's got all these different recipes from antifungal, like a chamomile antifungal spray for your seedlings or soil mixes, all different potting mixes, how to make seed bombs and even how to make, you know, seed tape and things like that. But there's lots of recipes like how to make a herbal smoothie for your garden so that it helps to feed it, all based on the principles of the herbal properties of the plants we already have growing around us.
And whenever you talk about the farming method not transitioning very well to the backyard, you're referring to traditional row and one crop per field. But in the permaculture realm, you're incorporating a lot of different variations of plants in one area to help each other grow better. Is that a better is that correct how I'm explaining that?
Absolutely. My book that came out in 2022, I guess this year, earlier this year, is called The Regenerative Garden, and it takes those permaculture concepts, which is not just about, you know, how we do the monocropping, the even rows, and, you know, planting only one kind of food source and leaving big spaces in between it. It's all about how we create an ecosystem in our yards that ends up supporting itself and being regenerative. So the idea is that it's less work for us. It takes less water. It uses less energy. It costs less in our, you know, in our budget and our time, because it follows the path of Mother Nature and how she's been doing it this whole time. So it gives us the opportunity to sort of look at how nature does it and build that ecosystem in our yards. So we still have, you know, beautiful cultivated gardens that don't just look like wild spaces. We can bring in non-native plants. We can plant the vegetables that we want to eat, but it's using those concepts to really work with nature rather than, you know, produce a farming method in our backyards.
In the process of writing these books, was there any aha moments, things that you were like, I thought I knew that, but clearly I was wrong? Or did you kind of really have a knowledge beforehand going into that?
Oh, I think everything was an aha moment for me. Every single time I planted another plant and it didn't do well when I expected it to, or it didn't follow what the textbook said, or the climate changed again, every single time I found that I learned something different and something new. You know, and that's the reality of living in the world that we're living in today, is that not only do we have, you know, very many changes on a global scale of what's happening with our climate and how plants are going to react to that, but in addition, we have microclimates that are in our own garden spaces. So we can't really depend on a 30-year weather average to figure out what it is that, you know, the understanding of what the climate's going to be, so we can garden and match that based on what a textbook says. We have to spend our time observing and experimenting in the garden and learning from the plants, listening to them, really creating that connection that allows us to learn from them, give them what they need, and you know, create almost a reciprocal relationship rather than a human input to grow plants than just to harvest. It's something that's more cyclical.
And that points to our garden, where it will frost in the fall. The neighbors' gardens and roofs will be covered with frost, but the way our backyard garden sets, it doesn't get hit for another couple of weeks. So it's very unique in how 12 feet here or 13 feet there or 20 feet makes a tremendous difference on if your tomatoes survive or not. And we have really very little control over that.
Absolutely. And that's how I start off the Garden Alchemy book, was to give the reader a little bit of an opportunity to start playing and practicing in their garden, to learn those observation experimentation skills, so that they can then learn about their unique microclimate. So in that first chapter, there's some soil testing that you can do at home with just ingredients from your kitchen, you know, nothing fancy. You don't need to send it off to the university extension to see if there's heavy metals in it. It's more just learning about your land and learning how to compost, learning how to add things back, how different kinds of mulch that you can use and where you would use them. All these things that will help you build the skills that you need for your unique landscape rather than, you know, following that textbook. So it's a book that is more open-ended and allows you to play in your garden and learn from how the plants react.
That's fantastic. So we are talking with Stephanie Rose. She spends her time as a gardener, writer, author, and artist in Vancouver, Canada. So you like to do DIY garden crafts. So do we. What is a good kid-friendly one that you could recommend?
I love to do things with kids, especially because I have a child who's turning 9 very soon. And he started with me when I was gardening and writing my very first book. He was in the baby carrier on me while I was doing all the photos and gardening. So he's grown up in the garden and calls himself a master gardener. And, you know, some of the projects that he really, really enjoys are anything that that is more immediate. So when we're planting things, especially at his younger age, when we're planting things, it's really wonderful to see them grow over the season and be able to harvest them. But the projects that I find really engage him is when we're doing the planting and the seed starting, you know, playing with the soil, making little newspaper seed pots. I've got some instructions on how to do that on the website, so I can give you guys the link so you can share it with readers. But making little newspaper seed pots, the children can start the seeds in them, and as they grow up, plant those in the garden. But then doing things like making painted garden markers so that there's a craft that goes along with it and it attaches to that seed when you can't really see it. When the plants grow up and you harvest them, I really like to do a scavenger hunt through the garden. So give a list of all the different senses. What can you see in the garden? What can you smell in the garden? What can you taste in the garden? And have them go around and experience all the different ways that the garden sort of feeds and engages with their senses. And those little scavenger hunts are really fun because, you know, you can do them for different seasons or you can have them really open-ended and see what they find. It's a really fun experiment.
Sounds like it, and keeps them engaged and gets them to eat what's being grown.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you enjoy making cold process soap in addition to the other things that you do in the garden with your books there. What is cold process soap? What is it? And would you encourage people to try it? Or is it one of these things that you need a lot of knowledge in order to make it happen?
I would absolutely encourage people to try making cold process soap. It is a really fun and artistic way of getting back to basics and sort of getting really back to that way that we used to make really simple household products that were full of great ingredients. The difference between a cold process soap and some of the soaps that we have available for us now is that you'll see those artisanal soaps at farmers markets and things like that that people make. Those are generally a cold process, a hot process, you know, a way of making a natural soap, which is a chemical process of converting salts and fats into lye, or sorry, with lye into soap, into something that we can wash with. And what we have now available is typically not listed as soap on the shelves. It's called something like a beauty bar or facial bar or a body wash, things like that. And those are full of detergents, which end up stripping our skin. Soaps are full of beautiful glycerin and natural fats and oils that can nourish our skin. And we can also add wonderful plant elements in with them. So you can infuse the oil. Say you're making an olive oil soap or coconut oil soap. You can infuse those oils with rose petals, calendula, lavender, and get all those wonderful aromas and properties from the plants that you're growing in your garden. So it is a little bit of a, I would say, an advanced technique, but I would not want anybody to shy away from doing it. I encourage people to find a local soap making class and take a class. And you'll get hooked. If you like crafty things, if you like making sourdough, if you like baking or cooking in your kitchen or doing, you know, creative projects at home, you're really going to love soap making as well, because you can just make the most beautiful creations with different scents and colors all naturally. So take a soap making class first. And then I've got a ton of recipes on my website. There's lots of recipes out there. The only thing with soap making is follow the recipe exactly, because any little change, like if we're making soup, we can substitute an ingredient. But if you're making soap, you don't want to do that. You want to keep the ratios exactly the same.
And if our listeners, if you've never used anything except for commercial grade bar soap from the store, you will never go back to it once you use a homemade soap or a soap that is a cold processed soap. It changes your whole perspective on how to bathe and the way your skin feels after it.
You said it so perfectly, Joey. Like, it's amazing, because what happens with these detergents is that we're stripping things away. And so we're taking away from our skin. We may be, you know, washing off some of the dirt or the oils or things like that. But with a natural soap, we're replenishing our skin. So you need to wash less. You're actually nourishing the skin. So it's really, it makes a huge difference. And so even if you don't have the opportunity to go out and make that kind of soap, go and buy some, because there's lots of beautiful people who make gorgeous, gorgeous soaps out there. You can get them on Etsy. You can get them at farmers markets. You can get them from, you know, local farms. I really encourage you to give it a try if you haven't yet.
Well, Stephanie, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us. How can people find out more about you? Where can they go and get your book and find out your recipes for soap?
I'm at gardentherapy.ca because I'm in Canada, so I'm not a .com, a .ca. But you can always Google anything that Stephanie Rose, Garden Therapy, Stephanie Rose Garden, anything like that, and you should be able to find me pretty quickly. My website has links to all of my social media, so come and follow me there. I give lots and lots of stuff, lots of information out on social media. But I've also got a really great newsletter if people want to sign up for that. I send out what's in season every week. So all sorts of cool projects and ideas and gardening tips come out every week, and that's a completely free newsletter. So if people want to come and sign up, they just go to gardentherapy.ca, subscribe.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, for taking time and educating not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. We greatly appreciate the time.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
Well, thank you.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.